Okay.
Hello. So, does everyone understand me? This is loud enough, or should I speak louder or not? Okay, all right. So, welcome. This is 888 Configuration System for Coders and Builders. This was announced as some kind of workshop. We are actually going to do more session style because, you know, live coding, you don't do that because everything will go wrong. We'll do some demos, of course. They will go wrong as well, but we'll see what happens. So, who are we? My name is Christophe de Jager. That's how you pronounce it in Dutch. I'm from Belgium. You might know me as Swentel on Drupal.org, also on Twitter. I'm the co-maintainer for Field API. I'm also the lead maintainer of Display Suite. There is a session tomorrow about Display Suite, which is hosted by Bram Goffings. He's also from Belgium, or Aspalicious. And I work at Wunderkraut, and this is Gabor.
Yes, hi. I'm Gabor Hoitschi. I work with Acquia. And I'm a long-time Drupal developer. I'm also leading the multilingual initiative, and I will have a session about that tomorrow. That also includes some configuration-related things, but we'll try to not cover the same topics here, so this will be more of a deep dive to the base configuration system, and tomorrow I will talk about the layer on top for multilingual as well.
Okay. So first, a service announcement. Stop serving me Palinka. Seriously, I like it. But maybe one, and maybe is Balint here? Are you here or not? Balint knows me already. I'm a really weak personality when it comes to alcohol. Just if you just say, do you want a Palinka? I'll probably say no first, and then 2 seconds later I'll go, yeah, give me one, and then you have a rough night, and then okay. But it's nice. It's really nice. I like being in Hungary for Palinka. So anyway, Drupal configuration. What are we trying to solve? So. Typically, you always have two, or maybe even more, environments. You have a dev environment. That's the place where you're going to build your site. You're just pointing and clicking around because Drupal is really powerful when it comes to site building. You just create your content types, you add fields, then you add some views, and you have also some simple settings forms. So the problem is, with Drupal Core, all this information is stored into the database. And when you have a live environment, you also have your content. I mean, clients are creating blog posts, they are creating whatever. But so you have a conflict there. Everything is stored into the database. And then when you have to try and move your new changes from dev to live, then you get into trouble. So it's been a long time that everyone has been trying to figure out some solutions for that, and there are some solutions, but they're kind of wacky. I mean, you have variable set, variable get. You can use hook update scripts. You can use global conf. That works. You have the database API to do some changes and whatever. There's also features. I guess features is probably the solution that comes close to doing it right. The biggest problem with features, or the biggest problem that feature actually has, is Drupal Core, because everything in Drupal Core is just scattered around. Information is just stored everywhere in different varied formats. It depends on which subsystem you're touching. So this is a picture of me doing deployments. Sometimes you actually never know what's going on. So for Drupal 8, we have a very new shiny system. So configuration is now stored in YAML file. So YAML is actually, it used to mean yet another markup language, and then they changed it to a different one. It's now YAML ain't markup language, but you don't have to really remember that. But YAML is really human readable. If you open up a configuration file, you will actually see what's going on there. It's not like a serialized format or whatever. You can actually see what's going on with your configuration. So when you install Drupal 8, you will have a active and staging directory. So in your site's default files folder, there will be a folder called config with a really big hash after it. That's for security. But you can actually choose where your configuration is going to live. So that is configurable through settings. I will show you that in a minute. So by default, all files, all configuration are stored in files. And we also, of course, have a caching layer, so Drupal is not going to read the configuration every request from those files. So Let me quickly switch to a terminal and terminal mirroring. So I've installed Drupal 8. Where I am right now is, so you have sites, default files, and there is a config directory right here. So this hash is different per site you will install. And what you see is you have an active and a staging directory. So active contains all the configuration for your site. If I would read it to active, there's just a bunch of files there. I'm not sure how many there are right now. So 185 files. So if you have a really complex site and a really big site, this directory will actually be full. I actually have a screenshot of Birder did an upgrade of a really complex site with around 500 fields and instances, so his directory was absolutely full. So you have an active directory and you have, let me do clear, you have a staging directory. The staging directory is used to move over configuration from one environment to another. So that's where you place your files if you have done changes and you want to import them in to a new site. So like I said, the placement of this config directory is actually, you can change that if you want to. So by default it's inside default files, but if you want to move it outside of the web root because it's probably a little bit more secure, you can just configure it so you can actually choose it how you are going to work in your workflow at your work. So you can change it. That's the important part that you need to remember. So, oh, let me quickly switch back. So how does a configuration file look like? So as an example, we're going to use system.site.yaml. So the first part is system. Usually there is no enforcement on how these files should look like or how they should be named, but to make sure that everyone, if they are looking in their Active Directory, understands a little bit what's going on, the first part is actually the owner. That's usually just a module. In this case, this is a system module. And then you have a second part. In this case, this is a site. This will contain the configuration of the site. The system module has a lot of configuration. There's site, there's cron, there's filter, maintenance, and all that stuff. So you have to give it some sort of context, just name it site. In case you have your own module and you only have a couple of simple settings, you can just do module.settings.yaml. So, and this is how it looks. It's really, really easy. It's if you open this, you can actually see what's going on. What's yeah, the slogan is invented by Alex Bot, actually. So it, at some point, this was actually a Drush command, but they removed it again. I don't know why. But so this is how it looks. It's really easy. It's readable, and let's go to the API. So how does it actually work for developers? So if you're a module developer and you have to, if you have settings, you have to either get them or set them or save them. That's it. It's ridiculously easy, actually. And you can actually more or less compare this with the old variable get, variable set, and variable del functions. But now it's just Drupal config, get, set, or save. So accessing is really, really easy. So for instance, if you want to have the site name, you just say Drupal config system.site, and then you say give me the name, so get name, and then you get configuration management. If you want something more, like say you want to have page, then you will actually get an array back. So this will give you back the 403, 404, and the configuration for the front page. Really, really easy. They did a really good job making sure that this API is really understandable and flexible to use. If you only want front, you can just do system.site get page.front. So you just go down in the hierarchy of your configuration file and you just get that back. If you want everything, you just say get. That's it. So this is actually really easy and understandable, and it's not that hard to start porting your modules to the new configuration API. So how about saving? It's actually just the same thing. You just do Drupal config system.site, then you say set and then some kind of key and then its value, and then you call save. So you can actually chain it, you can do multiple sets, and then just call save, and that's it. So like I said, this replaces variable get, variable set, variable del, and also the variable table, because I also misuse the variable table, and there's a lot of misuses of the variable table because everything is just basically dumped in there. I think I remember having a really big issue with a couple of modules that just stored everything in the variables, and variables are requested every page request, so if you have a lot of variables there, your memory can actually just explode in your site. So that's gone. Some other things that are gone, system settings form is dead. It was a really handy function that you could use in Drupal. You just created your form, you called system settings form, and then Drupal would magically save all those variables for you. You didn't have to do anything. So now you have to do some more work, actually. You have to add your own submit callback, and you're actually responsible for saving this configuration. What you also can do is you can ship with a default configuration file. So what you do is, if you create a module, you can create a subdirectory called config, and in that directory you just put, like, for instance, the system module ships with system.site.yaml, it has some default configuration, and that's it. So when you install the module, Drupal will copy that configuration from the directory from the module to the active store of your site. So this is how you work with really simple settings, but there are a lot more other configurations in Drupal, actually. We have things like languages. We have things like image styles, we have node types, we have permissions, we have filters. There's probably maybe some missing here, I haven't really counted them. So typically for these kind of configuration things, you have a table in your Drupal installation, and it contains multiple records, it contains multiple languages, it can contain multiple fields or instances. You will probably always have a lot of fields and instances in your installation. So for that, you don't really use the API that I just showed you. We actually invented something. Well, we didn't really invent something. We now have config entities. So just like you have content entities in Drupal 7, you now also have config entities. And that's really handy because they are sharing a lot of same API function calls. They extend from the same base class. You have a get, like say, an ID method to get an ID from an object. So whether you are working with content entities or config entities, they are more or less the same. It just has a different purpose. So how you, I don't know whether this is readable, but this will become a little bit more readable in a couple of minutes. You define entities and a lot of other stuff in Drupal 8 right now with annotations. So everything that you know about info hooks in Drupal 7, that's all gone. You now use an annotation. And the way that it works, basically annotations are comments in your file. This is actually an example of the category entity for contacts. And what it describes is, my ID is contact category, then you have a label also to translate, and then you also have the module owner. So in this case, this is the contact module owning the contact category entity, or config entity, sorry. And then you also have a controller, so you have a class where you have business logic going on for saving or updating, and you can also actually add your own methods in there. So depending on the functionality, for instance, the contact entity is not that complex, but the fields and instances classes are really much more complex. We have to do a lot more logic when we are installing fields and instances, for instance. And you also have a config prefix. What it means is, if you are going to save a new category or a new field or a new field instance or whatever, the config entity system for you will just use this config prefix, and then you have, for instance, contact.category.feedback, for instance. You don't have to add that yourself. The configuration entity system will do that for you automatically. So there's other stuff in here. You can have lists, so you have to actually list your contact categories or your fields or your languages and things like that. You can have your own forms for adding, editing, also deleting contact categories, for instance. And this is how it is. It's just like an entity type. It can have properties. They're really accessible at this point. all public, but we are in the phase where we are actually going to add more getters and setters to all the config entities, so they are easily more accessible. So, and this is how it looks. This is contact.category.feedback. It more or less resembles how system.site looks like. One big difference is that all the config entities also get a unique ID, a UUID. So the system actually will know that if you're going to try and override something, it will know that this is different, or it can actually compare what's going on. So config entity API, you can just use the entity API. You do entity load, or you do entity save, and if you have an object, you can call methods on it, and depending on your how complex your config entity is, you can go wild. For instance, the role configuration entity has methods to say, what permission do I have as a user? You can grant permissions and all kinds of stuff. Fields do really complex stuff. There are a lot of methods on there that you can use in your, if you want to write, for instance, field formatters or widgets, you can really have a good API. So, deployment. This is actually the site builder part. So, how does deployments now work in Drupal 8? So, you're just clicking around. We are at the site information right now. So, if you save, it will be saved to your Active Directory. And it will also be saved in a database. The database is actually just a cached version of your Active Directory. And what you want to do is you want to move it over to your staging directory. So you just copy all the files from the Active Store to your staging directory. And then there is a module in Drupal Core which is called the Configuration Manager. And it will show you what has been changed, what is new, or what has been deleted. Then you just click on import all, and then magically your site name has been changed. So let's do a little demo, because doing demos is a much nicer way of explaining this. So I have two environments. They are actually identical copies. I will explain it a little bit later. But what we actually are going to do now, or what I'm going to do, is let's go to site information and change the site name. Let's add a slogan. Save the configuration. So you enable the configuration module. It's actually already enabled. And what you can do is you get three menu paths. You can export your configuration, you can import, and also synchronize. So what we now want to do is we want to move this change to another environment. We just go to configuration export, and there's just a button there. Click on it, and it will download your complete configuration for you. So what it looks like, if I would just open up this file, config.dar, this is just containing the complete configuration of my website. So there's a lot of entries in here, and now the only thing I need to do is go to my staging environment or live environment. Now I want to actually import. You just select that file that you just downloaded, click on upload, and actually at this point nothing really happens. The system will show you what has been changed, and in this case apparently a couple of things have been changed, but all right, we'll see. But you can actually look at the changes as well. If you click on view differences, you will actually see what is going to change when I'm going to click on import all. So just for reference, my site is still called site install. Let's click on import all, and this is the crossing fingers part, because Drupal 8 is moving so fast that sometimes it might break, but so what it actually is doing now in the background, it is all the file. Oh, wow, yes. So I just reload, and now my site name is Drupaliton, and this is a slogan. What it did in the background, so all those files were copied to the staging directory. It's going to read those in. It's going to call the config API, do a lot of save calls, and then you're done. So this was really simple. This is not that exciting in a way. I mean, there are really more complex stuff in Drupal, like, say, content types. We can add new content types if you want to. Let's say stories, save content type. So content types are actually now not stored anymore in database tables, so they are now also a configuration file. And also fields and instances are also configuration files. So we have a body right now, for instance, but we can also add an image. Actually, this should maybe be image, or no, let's call it caption. That's it. So we just do the same process right now. We go again to configuration, export, click on the button, go to our other environment again, go to configuration, import. Just for reference, I have no story content type right here. Upload the file. Now it should actually show me what is going to be new. So there's a lot of new files here. So what you actually what you see is, I don't know whether, so this is the node type configuration file. You can look at it if you want to. And it actually says that this file is new, so that's great. How do I? oh crap, okay. Let's just reload. That's probably the ease. Let's move this back. So actually, there's a lot of other files here as well. So what you see here, for instance, the entity display, this contains all the information how your node is going to be displayed for the default view mode, for instance. Also teaser. There's also something very new, but it's not here. Weird, whatever, doesn't matter. But let's just click import all. This might take a little longer, but we'll see. There we go. And we now have a new content type which have been deployed from one environment to another. I mean, this is really, really cool. This basically works for everything now in Drupal core. Views are also just configuration files. You can just move over views really easily. Views were already really easy in Drupal 7 because it was using ctools exportables and things like that. But everything also now in Drupal core uses the same system, and it actually just works out of the box. That's really, really, really great. Now, an interesting thing about the configuration system is you cannot do partial imports. At some point during the development of Drupal 8, we did support partial imports because every config entity had a manifest file, and a manifest file just contained all, like you had a manifest file for views, and it just contained a list of all the config entities that existed, so that it could use that to identify what it was new, what is deleted, and whatever. So you can't do that anymore. You have to move over your complete configuration of one site to another one. So configuration management in Drupal 8 is not like features. You cannot have unique little small things like, say, news. A news feature can contain a content type and a view and some settings. You cannot do that with Drupal 8 configuration management system. So one of the things that probably features will do for Contrib is actually override the configuration system of Drupal 8 and actually bring back that notion of having features, individual small building packs. But Drupal 8 core does not do that for you. And actually, you have to be very careful, and I'm going to show you that. If I would just, let me just quickly check if my staging directory is empty. No. There's actually a bug. This should be gone. We'll talk to Alex. So, just an example of you cannot do a partial import. If I would just copy the system site file to my staging directory, and then I make a little adjustment. Doesn't really matter. If I would go to synchronize configuration, what Drupal will tell you is that one file has changed, but 192 others are going to be removed. So be very careful, because you can easily break your site like this. So no partial imports, it's really important to remember. Mm-hmm. That's a good question. There's a couple of issues on Drupal.org on how we are going to document the official way of doing workflows, for instance. I know that Daniel Wiener, the maintainer of Vue, he's working on a solution to work with Git and things like that. I haven't actually checked it out yet, but there's definitely, it's going to be a different way of doing projects at work, especially if you have a big team. I'm actually not sure yet how I'm going to do that with my team, for instance. One thing that I'm thinking of is that maybe the active and the staging environment is just a mounted file system somewhere that everyone has to mount. I don't know yet. So that's something that really has to be solved in a way. But this is not going to be solved by Drupal Core. This is typically something that we will have to explore again in Contrib somehow. There's a lot of issues, like also how you do this with Git, for instance. So Daniel Wiener is working that, because since that everything is now in a configuration file, you can actually just put that in version control, which is actually really handy, of course. But then you also have to do merges and things like that. I've actually haven't tested it yet, but this is how Drupal Core at this point works. There have been a lot of discussions of doing it differently, but Greg was like, no, we're going to make it just easy and make it work and not try and invent some maybe hacky or shaky workflows for Drupal Core, because if we release and it doesn't really work out well, then we have to wait 4 years again before Drupal 9 comes out. So all that stuff will be explored in Contrib for sure. And there, I mean, for I think I also talked to Jess XGM this week. She's investigating it, for instance, for Acquia Cloud and also Pantheon. They are actually actively exploring that idea at this point. So there will be solutions when Drupal 8 comes out for that.
I think the approach of the config system, that there's a lot of small files, actually helps with that, because each config entity is one file. So like the action to publish comments and the action to save comments, etc., are different config entities, or the Bardic breakpoints, or Bardic settings, or the Bardic breadcrumbs block. These are all different. So if you like only change the Bardic breadcrumbs block, that will only affect one file. It's easy to merge in. And if the other person changes the Bardic footer block, it's a different file. So it's easier to merge them together compared to if you have a system where everything for Bardic is in one file and you just have these conflicts inside the file that you need to resolve. So I think that helps with implementing that, but it's not supported per se.
So this is how you deploy. So remember, no partial imports for now. So like I said, advanced workflows, this is a link to a sandbox that Daniel Wiener on the Rhine is working on to have integration with Git. I will put the slides online so you can note it later. I actually haven't tested it yet, but I'm going to probably download it after this session to figure out if it actually works already or not. So I'm not sure. Let me just... okay, so there is a new rule. Actually, it's not my rule, but Alex Pott is. This is Alex Pott's new rule. So we have this mantra that says don't hack Drupal Core. There's a new mantra, and it says don't hack your active config. This is really, really important because there are now just files and they're easily accessible. You can just go into your active directory and just open up a file and change something, and then probably it will work, for instance, for like the system side file. That is just a really simple setting. But don't go hacking in your languages, or especially not in your fields or instances. Why? When there is an import of configuration, especially for fields and instances, for instance, tables have to be created. So when the configuration system finds a new file, it's going to say, okay, import this new configuration file. And then a lot of other actions need to happen. For fields, we have to create tables, or we have to update our tables. Or for languages, I could imagine that we have to, well, not necessarily, but we update language translations. So all these stuff, don't hack your active config, because you can easily break your site, and it's quite hard to recover, actually, at this point. So don't hack your active config. It's a new rule from Alex Pott, and remember it. So there's something. Yeah, it's because it's so easily accessible, it's so easy to change it. There's, I think, for now, no way for us to know if something has changed. The trouble is, as long as you don't clear your cache, you're still okay, because the configuration is in your files and is then, of course, read from cache. But once the cache is cleared, it's going to read in all the configuration from your Active Directory, and if you have changed something that really needs some kind of events to happen, and it doesn't, then you're probably going to be screwed with your site, which is kind of sad. So remember, don't hack your Active Config. There's also a state API. So there are some variables in Drupal Core that are actually environment independent. So when was the last time cron was run? When was the last time I've checked the updates of my modules, for instance? So those don't have to be in configuration. You just use state API. If you lose this kind of information, Drupal will just reuse it or rebuild it when needed. So you have config for configuration that's actually needed, and you have the state API to have some kind of information about something, but that can be rebuilt easily without if you lose it. So there is also some Drush integration. Actually, at this point, it's broken again because Drupal 8 is moving really fast. There is Drush integration in that sense. You can actually use the rsync command from Drush to move from your Active Directory to your staging directory in a different environment, and there's an import command. So I hope it will be fixed again, because that's a really handy way to move your configuration around. You can actually also use Drush to edit some configuration. So let's say you want to change the site name. You can actually just do Drush cedit site name. It will open up the file in your favorite command line editor, and when it saves the file, it will actually just do the whole configuration process for you. So you don't have to do import, export, and click buttons and whatever. So there's a lot of command line hacking tools already available, but sometimes it breaks because Drupal 8 is constantly moving. So we also have a context system, events, and override system, and for that I'm going to give the mic to Gabor.
Can I get it out? I don't know. I'm fine standing. So we have a context system with events and overrides, and it sounds like a lot of stuff. Yes. We got some tips. So there's a context system, events and overrides, and it sounds like a lot, but you may have seen some of that in Drupal 7 already. For example, the global overrides. You may have used the global overrides for settings in Drupal 7, and that's pretty much like this in Drupal 8 as well. So you have a global conf array, and you can override anything in your configuration files with PHP array data. Sounds like a lot of fun. So you can do like system.maintenance message, sorry, our site is down now, which will override the data inside system.maintenance, which is under a message key. So you can still do this. It's the same as in Drupal 7. I'm not sure there are plans to make this much nicer than this. I would not suggest you to do this, really. So if you want to protect your stuff from being changed, then there will likely be more better solutions, strong arm for Drupal 8 or something like that. But if you need something right now, you can do this global overrides. And the way global overrides work is an event system, which is much like hooks, but they're not hooks, because hooks are boring and old, and we have events. So why not do something new and fun? So we have an event system in Drupal 8. Which is very much like hooks. So this is how the global overrides are implemented. This is all the code to make global overrides work in the configuration system. So what we do is we do a class that implements the event subscriber interface, which is defining us the get subscribed events method, and we tell the system which event we want to subscribe to, which is kind of the equivalent of the hook name from Drupal 7, and we say we want to sign up for the config.init event. So when the configuration data is initialized in Drupal, we want to sign up for that event, and we want to add a callback to that event, which is our config.init method, and we add a wait or a priority to that event subscription. The event subscribers are invoked in their priority order. So when that event happens in Drupal, so when the config.init event actually fires, then our config.init method is invoked. It gets this event, and we get the configuration from that event, and if the global conf array has a key for that value, then we set that override with the configuration system. So you don't need to implement this, it's already implemented. So I'm showing this as an introduction to the event subscriber system in Drupal 8. This is how the global overrides are implemented. And if you want to work with overrides for configuration, you can use the setOverride method on config to set overrides. And these are different from setting the actual values, because now in Drupal 8, the configuration system can differentiate between the base configuration value that is saved back to the configuration system and between the overrides that are not saved back to the configuration system but are stored in memory for the request. So you can set values that you want to have for this request, but they are not saved back. So you can have overrides that don't interfere with your actual base configuration. Now, the global overrides by default are active in your system. So if you don't want to have the global overrides, you really want to access the actual configuration, the original one, then you need to deactivate the context system, because by default you already have the global overrides. So there's a context system which you can tell what context you want to have the configuration loaded with. And you can opt out of that context system by entering the free context. And then you can leave that context later on. So there's a context stack, and by default you are in a global override context that uses all these global overrides that you set. And if you want to really access the original values without the overrides, then you can do that by entering the free context and then getting the value and then leaving it if you want to get back to where you were. So the context system is designed to inform the configuration layer for what kind of overrides you want to apply. By default, it applies the global overrides, and there can be other kinds of overrides, like language overrides, or if you use the domain module, you want to have per domain overrides for your configuration, or if you use StrongArm, or if you use Paces, then any other overrides based on some kind of condition on the system. Those can be loaded in the runtime for the page, and you inform the configuration system through contexts about what kind of overrides you need. And we'll see another example of overrides on the next slide. But basically, you use the config context enter and config context leave to tell the system what kind of override context you want to get into, and then the event subscribers react to those contexts and act according to those. So you can get to the original configuration this way, but if you want to have a user context, for example, you want to have configuration specific to a user, then you can enter a user specific context. So Drupal Core implements the user config context. You can enter that context and set the user account on that context. And from here, the configurations are available with overrides for that user. So what does this mean? For example, if you access the user email text, these are user.mail is a configuration file that includes email text information for when you sign up, when you register on the site, or when you are blogged, or when you get activated. Those emails will be specific to the user. And for example, the language system reacts to this and looks at the language of the user and will put in overrides for that language. So the user will get language specific text for all those emails in this context. So it's important for you when you build the contributed module to get into specific context for the areas of the code that you want to use. So if you want to deal with the user and like send an email to a user or display something specific to the user, then you enter the context for that specific user, and then you will access the data for that context. And when you don't need that anymore, you can leave that context and you get back to the prior context. It's a stack. So you put in the context at the top of the stack, and then when you're ready to leave, you get off that context and then you go one level down. There's protection built in that you can go out of the stack. So if you call config context leave 100 times, there will be nothing bad happening there. So core implements the free context, which tells every override not to operate. It tells everybody, please don't override anything. And then there's a user context, which is user specific. And there's language context, which is language specific. If you don't want a specific user or a specific language, you can do that as well. And contrib can implement any other kind of context. So Agent Rickard is porting the domain module to Drupal 8, and he's working with contexts and overrides to implement domain-specific overrides for your system. So let's see how these overrides actually appear in your system. This is an example of block configuration. So this is the Bardic login block. And the Bardic login block is a configuration entity. So it has a machine name, which is bardic.login. It has a UUID, as Swentel said, which applies to every configuration entity. And it has all kinds of other data, like block weight, whether it's enabled, what's the language of the settings of the block, and then where it's placed, which plugin provides this block, and some other settings. And the language override system actually uses the configuration system to store the overrides as well. So the locale module stores overrides for specific languages, and those only contain data for that language override. So in the first case, that's a Hungarian override for this block. So locale.agu. The name of the config file is the language override for Hungarian for this config file. And it contains the label settings, which is the only translatable piece, essentially, in this file. And it translates it to Hungarian. And then we can have any other override for other languages, in this case, Dutch. That also does the same for user login. So how this works is essentially the locale module also has an event subscriber, very similar to the global event subscriber that I've shown. And when you are in a context that needs a language, you are in a specific context for user and you know the language of the user, or you are in a language context or any other context that provides a language, then it looks up the overrides for that specific language and it sets it for the configuration. So when you access the label setting for this block, it transparently provides you with the override for the applicable for that context. So if you are in the user context for myself and I have Hungarian set in my account, then that override will apply, and if you access the Bardic login block label, it will say the Hungarian label for the login block. So this is much better than the PHP arrays for global overrides, because this is stored inside the configuration system. This is in the active directory for configuration. So when you update these translations, they can be pushed to another environment. When you get these translations from staging, all the synchronization works. So it's very good, I think, for staging and deployment. The global overrides are not implemented so nicely. They may benefit from being implemented the same way, I guess. But then they may be editable by those who can edit config files, but not PHP files, I don't know. So there's benefits either way. There's a lot of discussion on whether the global overrides are actually should be enforced as a security measure in Drupal core. They are not enforced right now. So you can go into contexts like the free context that does not do global overrides. And some people insist that that's a security problem, because if you want to set global overrides, You probably do that because you don't want your site administrators to be able to change those settings. So if they still can change those settings and some occasions on your site, those settings will be used instead of your global overrides. That may be a security problem. So there's a lot of discussions around that, but we don't yet have a solution to that question. So that's how the override system works and how events work to override your configuration. So essentially, overrides can come from any source. Language overrides are implemented in the configuration file system, and global overrides are implemented as PHP arrays, and both of them work, and they can interact and work at the same time. And the most interesting situation is when you have global overrides and language overrides and domain overrides and organic group overrides and all of those things, and then which override prevails at the end. That's a very good question. As I've said, Agent Rickard is working on porting the domain module, and then Florian Weber, Webflow, is working on solution to negotiate between these overrides and figure out how to decide which one wins if you have overrides for the same thing. However, there's one more piece in the system that helps with the language overrides to some degree and also helps you in working with the configuration system, and that's configuration schemas. So the question is how the Drupal translation system can work with those language overrides and how we can help you work with these configuration files easier. And we found a solution in configuration schemas, which is actually pretty custom implementation for Drupal core on data typing for configuration. So let's say you have your system maintenance YAML file, which is your site maintenance settings. It has two keys. It says whether your maintenance mode is enabled or not, so whether your site is operating fully or is only in maintenance. In this case, it operates fully. And then it has a message which tells Drupal what to display when your site is in maintenance. So that's a very simple file with two keys. And we have the schema system to explain what this file is and how the data types in this file are. And the schema system is actually also using the YAML file structure. And it explains the file structure for system.maintenance. So you can write a system.schema.yaml file and place it in your config/schema directory and explain your data structure. Why would you explain your data structure? First, you can use this data structure to generate forms. So we have a module that automatically generates forms for your configuration based on your data structure, because this provides you labels and type information, and it knows the key so it can save back to the data. So we can use this to generate a form for you and provide an interface to edit your configuration. It's also very useful for type checking, which we don't do in core at all, but you can do in your contributed module to check when you import configuration from somewhere, do a migration, or do a web API, or do an API for your site. You can check the type on the data that's coming in. You can validate the data, essentially. And the translation system also uses this to extract translatable strings from your configuration. So it knows that the text type is translatable, so it will extract your site maintenance message for translation, and that's how, and it also generates the language override files based on the schema. So the schema is not a required component in Drupal configuration. You don't need to write these files, but if you want to use the, if you want to generate forms, or you want to validate your data automatically, or you want to interact with the translation system, which I hope you do want to do, then it's best practice to write these schema files. So how do schema files look like? You say you want to define the data structure for a system.maintenance. You say it's a mapping, which is a key value pairs, essentially an associative array. And you can provide labels for them, which is useful for generating forms. And you say this is maintenance mode settings. And then the mapping key provides the actual key value pairs. And you have a key called enabled, and you have a key called message. And the enabled key was a Boolean type, it's 0 or 1. And the message key was a text type, it was a string, a long string. And then both of them get a label. So you can describe the data structure for your files, and you can provide some simple user interface text as well that can be used to generate forms. There are some basic data types in the system. So we have Boolean, email, integer, string, URI, etc. These are defined by the type data system. And then we have types specific for the configuration. We have undefined, which is the base data type if you don't provide the data type. And we have mapping and sequence. And mapping are key value pairs, are associative arrays. And sequence is a numbered list. In YAML, it's designated by hyphens. So you either have a mapping, a sequence, or some concrete data type like Boolean or integer or string. Yep. And then we have some extended data types. So for example, we have the label data type that is extending from a string, and we have a path data type that's also a string, and we have a text data type that's also a string. Now, why do we do this? Because all of them are essentially strings. We do this because subtyping strings is very useful for generating user interfaces, or validating data, or doing translations. So if you need to generate a user interface, it's very important for you to know whether you want to generate a one-line text field, a multi-line text field, or a text field that validates as a Drupal path and also contains a prefix that has the URL of your Drupal site, so the user knows how it looks like. So when you need to generate a user interface for these three types of strings, it will generate very different user interfaces. And if you want to validate them, it's also very different because this is a long string. This is a one-line short string. It should not contain a new line. And this is a Drupal path, so you can validate it as a Drupal path. And if it's a valid Drupal path, then it's OK. If it's not, then it's not OK. So we also subtype from base types. And basically, all of that you do with schemas is also subtyping. So when you say you define system.maintenance, you are subtyping the mapping type to a specific type, the system maintenance type. And this is also useful for plugins. And when you reuse structures, we have an email data type, for example, which contains a subject and a body. And you can reuse that data type later on as well. So it looks like this. It's a mail data type, which is a map subtype of a mapping. And it has a subject, which is a text, and a body, which is a text. And it's probably wrong because the subject should be a label. It's a one-line text field, or one-line text input. So you can subtype as you want. And basically, everything you do in schemas is subtyping. So all of the definitions of the schemas are subtyping. So again, this is how it looks like for maintenance mode. We subtype from the mapping type to system.maintenance. We give it a specific label. If we don't do it, then it will use the mapping label from the mapping type. And we define the enabled key and the message key and provide the types for them as well. So this is how you define schemas for your stuff. And then there's an API side of this as well. So you can access your data through the schema. You can say you want Drupal type data get definition, and you want to get the type data definition of this configuration key. And it will get you the data as well as, no, in this case, we get definition. So it will get the definition as resolved to classes in Drupal. So it will tell you this is the maintenance mode config, and it's a mapping. And now you get the actual class that implements mappings. And then it has a Boolean and a message key. And then you can pass this on to the mapping class, and the mapping class will work with this and can dive deeper into the data structure and can work with your Booleans and text. Now, we actually implemented a module to introspect configuration based on schemas. It's called the config_inspector module. It does not work with Drupal 8 right now. We tried it before. But Swentel has a copy of Drupal 8 that it works with, so he can demo it on his computer. But essentially what it does is it gives you a list of all the configuration on your site. And then, well, this is not that list, but it gives you a list of all configuration on your site. And then you can go into each configuration and you can introspect that configuration through the schema. And then it will tell you each of the keys inside the file and then the types of them and the value of them. And it can generate a data tree for you based on that, a form based on the configuration, or it can provide you with a raw data overview of what you have in the file. We don't have a reusable form generation component yet that you will use in your modules, but this is essentially the starter base for that code. And it will likely be a module that you can use to generate forms based on your schemas. So you may not need to even write the controller classes that Swentles have shown if you use configuration schemas and generate them automatically. So this is where I will get this back to Swentle. You can do it if you want. Okay, so I can do that. Yeah, so Config Inspector is very useful to see what kind of configuration is on your site. You just enable it in the module list, and then it sits at a most unexpected place, reports Configuration Inspector. I think I suggested it to put it there, but I'm not sure anymore why. And it gives you a list of all your configuration. So this is essentially a huge list of everything on your site. And then you can see what's going on. Like there's a tour for views, a user interface tour for views, and you can see what's in there. And then it will apply all of the schema information to that and show you that this is a views UI tour. It's provided in English. It applies to views paths and then provide you with all the information about this tour. So this is a user interface guide essentially for views, and you can see a data tree structure where you can dive in and see the values and the types and the whole structure of the file through the data types. So this is a tour for views and it contains these tips for views, and there's a tour tip that tells you this is an active display in the view, etc. And there's another tour tip that talks about multiple displays, and there's another tour tip that talks about field output. So you can explore your data like this, and then we can also generate forms based on this structure. So we can do the right form elements based on the types that you provided and give like number select for number types. So we can use HTML5 elements as appropriate based on your data types. And then you can obviously look at the raw data itself, which is an array structure as loaded by the configuration system and another structure for your configuration schema that is very similar to the one I've shown up there. And then there's a lot more to configuration schemas. For example, in this case, you may or may not see, so I will zoom in, that there's more fun subtyping involved here. So we have tour tips, which are plugin based, and we call out to the tour tip plugin schema based on the plugin where this tour tip comes from, and that gets the schema from there. So there's a lot of more details around configuration schemas that we haven't went into. But those are all there to support complex situations like tours, views, or any other system essentially that needs plugins in Drupal Core. So I would very much suggest you to familiarize yourself with the Configuration Inspector module, because this lets you understand what kind of things are available in configuration. It also lets you introspect and see what's in there. it does not let you actually change anything. So if you go to the form, I've got people complain that there's no submit button on this form. Yes, there's no submit button on this form. If there would be, that would be equivalent of hacking your active config, because this just updates the config file. So we don't do that. This just demonstrates that that we can generate a form out of your schema. And if you want to use this code to generate forms, then you can do it in your own module. And in your form submit handlers, you can invoke anything else that you need to invoke when the configuration changes. But we don't know here what other things need to be run after this configuration changes, so we don't do that at all. We just demonstrate that it's possible to generate forms. So that's it for Config Inspector.
So some simple advice: if you are going to create your own modules in Contrib, especially because if other people want to use your modules, if you create your configuration, make sure that your config keys are actually something meaningful. Don't use garbage keys, because otherwise someone else that needs to access your data is not going to know what's going on over there. So for simple settings, make sure that your config keys are understandable for everyone. If you have multiple versions of some configuration, like for instance languages or fields or whatever, don't use tables anymore. We have a configuration system. Use config entities, use the config entity API that's in core. It will make sure that your module, if it contains configuration, can be deployed from one environment to another. I'm pretty sure if you don't do that, then your module will not be used in Drupal 8, or you will get a bug request that you have to use the config entity API. So if you don't use it, you will not be used. So whatever. And as Gabor says, try to include config schemas. Why? Especially in Europe, we have to make so much multilingual websites. This config schema will also make sure that we will be able to translate configuration. There is a config translation module, which hopefully will go into core. And if it's not, then it will be a contrib, but it's more or less... does it work already?
Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah, it works. So it's in the sandbox or not, I'm not sure.
No, it's config _translation.
Yeah, so config _translation uses the config schema to generate and make sure that you can translate your site information name, for instance. So make sure you have a config schema. If you don't have, then someone will actually make an issue in your issue queue, that because he can't translate your configuration, and that would be really, really sad. So really simple advice. There are some resources on the internet. I will put those slides online in a couple of minutes. If you have trouble, you can always join IRC and go to Drupal CMI channel. There's a lot of friendly people over there. Alex Bott is usually there. I'm there. Gabor is there. Greg Dunlap is there as well. So we can always help you if you're stuck in some way. So, and you can also go to Gore Mentoring Hours if you're interested to helping out. There is still some... Well, Sam, there is a lot of stuff that still needs to be done before we ship. We need to have a lot of configuration schemas in core. There's a lot that still have to be resolved. So if you're interested in that, I think that Gabor is also going to work a little bit on that, maybe on Sunday during the sprint. So if you're interested in configuration management and doing schemas, because they're not that hard to create, you can go to Gabor and ask him for an issue. There's still a lot left, as far as I remember. A couple of thanks. Hey Rocker, which is who's Greg Dunlap, who is actually the owner of the CMI initiative. Angie, Mosh Weitman, Gabor, and also Alex Bott. So that's it. So any questions?
Yes.
Balint. Maybe you should use the mic.
Yeah.
Thank you. So when you showed the language overrides, I was wondering, so that was configuration, and you use the config layer to translate a label. So what's the distinction between now the translation files and that config file?
So what's happening in Drupal core is, when you enable a module, then the locale module uses the schema files to figure out the structure of your configuration, and then it extracts every source string. It also looks at whether your configuration is English. It only works with English source. So if your configuration is English, then it will look at the schema, and it will parse out every text and label values of data that is either text or label type. And it will parse those out and put it into the database for translation. So it will be in the database. And then you can translate on the UI in Drupal built-in, or you can download PO files from localizeddrupal.org that include translations for those. And then when those are imported into the database, or you enter them through the user interface, then the locale module goes out and writes the overrides files out that I've shown on the slide. So what happens is the locale module gets all the source strings out of the base configuration, and then it writes out all the translations to the override files as well. So it's the locale module's responsibility to get your translatable text and make it available for people to translate and then write the translation files. So as long as you provide schema, then everything should magically work, and all of your default configuration should be translatable. So right now, if you install Drupal 8, you can translate any view or content type or user role or input format or anything else through the locale module's built-in user interface in Drupal Core right now. Thanks to this, and then you will see those override files popping up in the file system as you translate different things.
Okay, so it's never you who writes the overrides files?
No. No, unless you want to deal with something in the overrides, you don't need to think about that, because it will be written by the locale module. If your configuration is not in English, that's the other situation, then the locale module will ignore your configuration. And then the config underscore translation module comes in, which supports that use case, and that will provide a user interface based on your schema that actually uses the schema not only to parse your source, but also to generate a user interface for you. And it can put a translate tab on your page, and it generates a page automatically that lists all the languages and then allows you to translate. And you don't need to do anything for that either, a part of writing your schema and also implementing one hook to hook up the your path with the config translation module. So it's writing the config schema and then five lines of code, and then your configuration has a user interface for translation and is translatable. It's pretty cool, I think.
Yeah. So you don't even have to put them into version control, right? Because
No.
And I guess the same goes for these files, do not hack those, because
Yeah. Otherwise. They are in active config like anything else.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Dinesh? You're standing in line.
Yeah, so just to follow up on that, so you have to have these language overrides in the configuration, because configuration doesn't pass through the T function or something like that, but it goes from some kind of override?
Yes. So configuration does not go through the T function, because the base configuration system doesn't know what needs to go through a T function. And also, we've implemented the override system in a generic way that allows you to have domain-specific overrides or organic group-specific overrides or user role-specific overrides for Drupal Commerce or whatever else. And we did not want to special case language to use a different system. So the configuration system has overrides for any kind of override, and language is one case. And it works with the event subscriber and the override system the same way as anything else. And then it just works together, and they can negotiate what override prevails and all those things.
So
If you have any other questions, you can always talk to me or Gabor. We're still here for 2 days. So thank you for listening and have fun.
Thank you.